Look, thanks, Lenore, and it's wonderful to see rain coming out of the sky. Thank you for inviting me to speak about my shadow ministerial environmental responsibilities and, quote, overcoming the challenges ahead, particularly in the context of CEDA examining the state of the nation. And it is a real privilege for me to be Labor's spokesperson on climate change, the environment, heritage and the arts. For me, this portfolio is all about protecting and nourishing those things that make Australia so special. Our beautiful natural environment, our extraordinarily rich cultural heritage, including our precious Indigenous heritage, and our vibrant arts community. And it's about sustaining our prosperity by seriously tackling climate change. I'd like to acknowledge the important contribution CEDA makes to public debate, including on issues to do with climate change, energy and water resources. I want to talk to you this morning about the greatest economic and environmental challenge our nation faces, climate change. I start by making three clear points. Firstly, the overwhelming weight of scientific opinion is that human behaviour is warming our planet, and unless we act very quickly to stabilise and substantially reduce our greenhouse emissions, we will be facing increasingly dangerous climate change. Second, substantial scientific and economic evidence shows Australia can and must cut its greenhouse pollution, and that this can be done whilst ensuring strong economic growth. And I note economic modelling identified by the IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and specific modelling done by ABARE, the Australian Business Roundtable on Climate Change, and AGL Frontier, all of which show Australia can substantially cut its greenhouse pollution and maintain economic growth. Third, as Kevin Rudd has made clear, the best way to deliver real climate change solutions is through a national consensus on climate change, building a national consensus on climate change. We have a strong view that we need to focus on solutions, not symbols, on reality, not rhetoric. Speaking of rhetoric, the government seems very keen to paint me as some sort of archetypal anti-market monster who would drag us all down to the R word because we, the ALP, are determined to do something solid and sensible in regard to climate change. And on what are they trying to base this image? An untruth, as it turns out, about my opinions and therefore ALP policy on an interim emissions cut target. Another untruth in regard to what the Prime Minister's own emissions trading task group said. A misguided notion about either or divisions in society and policy. And finally, building on rhetoric, referring to my former profession. I'll get to the first two of those in a minute, but in relation to the last one, the fact is that before I entered Parliament, I helped run and was joint owner of a small business. And I don't mind saying to you, a long-lasting and successful small business at that, in one of the toughest, most competitive markets around. I am not anti-market, and I am not anti-business. Never have been. Even though this government hardly recognises it, rock and roll, and music generally, is an industry. And in relation to the third furphy, the Coalition is falling back on the outdated notion, I beg your pardon, that you can either have a healthy economy or a healthy environment, but that you can't have both. In fact, you can and must have both. And you can, of course, have a healthy economy and also take strong, necessary action on climate change and protection of the environment. As British economist Nicholas Stern noted in his recent visit and in his report, it's the case that the economics of climate change means that action to reduce emissions must be taken now, otherwise there will be greater economic costs in the future. Yet Stern was roundly upbraided by the government when he visited for expressing such an impertinent view. The Australian Business Roundtable on Climate Change, including leading companies like BP, Westpac, IAG and Visy, have made it clear that, and I quote, climate change is a major business risk and we need to act now. The Australian community and Australia's business community has come to the realisation that climate change is, literally, an enormous economic and environmental challenge. And my sense is that the government too has come to that realisation, that it's an enormous challenge at least, but only as a political challenge, now as it recognises the huge concern in the community in regard to climate change and the fact that it, the government, has done nothing really substantive for 11 years on this matter and now sees the public opinion polls bearing down upon it. Make no mistake, Australians are concerned about climate change, in part because of the prolonged major drought which has been affecting part of the nation. Each major city grappling with increasing water restrictions and decreasing dam levels. And as we meet here with very welcome rain falling across parts of New South Wales, it remains the case this drying trend will only worsen under climate change. The world's leading climate change scientists, the IPCC panel, have concluded that climate change has intensified Australia's current drought. That was in the fourth report. The Australian Government's Climate Change Risk and Vulnerability Report concludes there could be a further 20% reduction in rainfall in southwest Australia, up to a 20% reduction in runoff in the Murray-Darling Basin by 2030. The CSIRO's estimated that a 20% reduction in Australian irrigation allocations would deliver a reduction in GDP of about $750 million in 2009-2010. Some more figures quickly. By 2020, 60% of the Great Barrier Reef, our great national and international treasure, could be regularly bleached. By 2050, 97%, sadly, could be bleached each year. Now, 200,000 jobs are directly dependent on a healthy reef. It generates around $4.3 billion for our economy. Now, climate change in action is a recipe for economic downturn and job losses in our critical agricultural and tourism industries. And the economics of climate change are such that it's in the interests of business, small, medium and large, in rural and regional Australia and in cities and towns across Australia, to engage in real, comprehensive action to address climate change. And that's what we're seeing right across the nation. It concerns me greatly that the government's so far behind businesses in Australia in regard to such action. So many businesses, including many in this room, recognise the need for action, for practical action, and recognise that such action, if done in the right policy framework, with the right incentives, can be on a least cost basis and have economic and productivity benefits. The real public policy failure, I have to say, of the Howard government in first denying, then delaying and always remaining sceptical about the threat of climate change is that this both increases future costs for risk management and delays opportunities for business to invest, innovate and grow within a clear framework established for emissions reductions. In regard to emissions trading, we've quite simply lost any first mover advantage to such markets as the EU, particularly Germany, the United States, particularly California, promoted and encouraged, of course, by a Republican governor. While claiming the current Kyoto Protocol is inadequate and flawed, despite also crowing, again misleadingly, about how it will meet Kyoto targets, and saying it's going to get involved with something better than Kyoto, the government hides the fact that the current Kyoto Protocol expires in 2012 and negotiations are beginning this year for the second phase of Kyoto, or a post-Kyoto. Australia continues to miss out on opportunities by refusing to ratify Kyoto and will miss out again if the government refuses to sit down at the table to negotiate the post-2012 agreement. Observer status will not be sufficient. Last week, the G8 agreed to consider the target of a 50% cut by 2050 and importantly said, and I quote, "We acknowledge that the UN climate process is the appropriate forum for negotiating future global action on climate change." That was the G8's message, and that is the international reality. But the Prime Minister still remains determined to try and operate outside this UN framework, the Kyoto framework. He reminds me of the single person in the march past putting his left foot down when everyone else is putting their right foot down and then claiming he's the only one in step. Australians also continue to miss out on economic opportunities because the government simply refuses to support our innovative clean energy industry. Andrew Richards of Pacific Hydro made this abundantly clear when he said on the 5th of June, if federal and state renewable energy targets were abolished, then certainly that would have a profound impact on our investment profile here in Australia. We would probably take that $1.5 to $2 billion investment and take it offshore to places like Chile and Brazil and California and make those investments in those countries instead of Australia. And indeed, other companies have been forced to do just that. My colleague Wayne Swan spelled out in detail in a speech last Friday to the Australia-Israel Chamber of Commerce the economic costs and lost opportunities inherent in not taking strong action, such as setting a clear pricing, carbon pricing signal in regard to carbon emissions and the enormous economic cost of a failure to combat global warming. The Business Roundtable on Climate Change report found that delaying too long to set a carbon price signal through an emissions trading scheme would mean a doubling of the costs of meeting the target and could see electricity prices rise more steeply and some 250,000 less jobs created. And the opportunities in greenhouse abatement technologies, in carbon trading, in practical energy efficiency methods, measures and technologies are abundant. The fact is we're witnessing a global clean energy revolution at this point in time. A clean energy revolution which is critical that Australia be a part of. We need to be a part of that revolution. At the moment we're not. In fact, not only do we need to be a part of it, we need to drive that revolution. About $30 billion was invested in clean energy worldwide in 2004. That's excluding large-scale hydro. The fastest growing energy technology in the world is grid-connected solar photovoltaic, which grew by 60% between 2000 and 2004. And I quote one of many studies, this one by the University of California at Berkeley, concluding that the renewable energy sector generates more jobs per megawatt of power installed, per unit of energy produced, and per dollar of investment than the fossil fuel-based energy sector. Australia has the potential to be a regional hub for clean energy. Our solar scientists are amongst the best in the world. But that will require genuine investment domestically in clean energy and a suite of policies, including targets that enable this growth. Now, it doesn't make economic or environmental sense to have a carbon emissions trading scheme without a long-term target. Now, it's difficult to know what drives the government's phobia about targets. Perhaps it's because the ALP has one. The government's emissions trading task group, of course, didn't set a target. But unless a specific target is set, it forces potential market participants to factor in a risk that the market will change according to political whims. You can't value anything if you're not told what the assets are worth. And I'm sure economists are scratching their heads at the government's theory that you can have an emissions trading scheme without a specific target. But having no targets, like getting people to race each other and not telling them which direction to run or how long the race is. Over 2 years ago, I talked with the then Sydney's Futures Exchange, now part of the AXS, about their strong desire for a national carbon trading scheme and the need for such a scheme. That was after 9 years of failure to act by this government. Remember, the Futures Exchange took major steps to establish itself as a regional hub for emissions trading. Not unreasonably, it saw the inevitability of emissions trading in Australia and then waited for government action. And waited, and waited, and waited. Still now, the Prime Minister's only released a report by a task group recommending that such a scheme be established, but without setting the target under which the scheme would work. It defies logic. It is, in the true sense of the word, incredible. And I want to quickly address the peculiar notion claimed by the Prime Minister last Sunday week that cutting emissions by 20% by 2020 would require closing down all fossil fuel power plants and putting all cars off the road. He made this claim, which should have been roundly laughed at, when trying falsely to claim that such a cut would be ALP policy. It's not our policy. But the Prime Minister went ahead anyway and verbaled his own emissions trading task group. The task group did not directly make those claims, and the scenarios they outlined was not based on any detailed economic modelling. And this was about the Prime Minister playing political games when he said, that would mean, and I quote, removing all vehicles from our roads. That's the Emissions Trading Task Force analysis. That's wrong. The task group did not say that. It did not say such a cut would require such action. It actually said such a cut was equivalent to such an action in tonnage of reduced emissions. It also made clear there will be many least cost and even net benefit abatement measures such as technological innovation and change. Of course, a country doesn't need to impose such drastic measures. It would certainly be news to Germany, which is looking at a 40% cut by 2020, or Norway with a 30% cut, or the UK with a similar aim. The fact is, significant reductions can be gained relatively quickly with the right policies and without threat to the economy on a least cost basis through energy efficiency, technological breakthroughs, increased use of renewable energy, and joining international trading schemes such as those operating under Kyoto. You simply do not need to do what Mr. Howard claimed. At the same time, the Prime Minister also claimed I was advocating a 20, 25, 30% emissions reduction cut. In fact, I was talking about energy efficiency. I said there's a significant percentage of emission reductions you can take from demand management and energy efficiency, and went on to say we've additionally got the capacity to produce low emissions technology in regard to clean energy sources and renewables. And energy efficiency is an important part of the recipe to cut emissions. It's called the low-hanging fruit. I'm sure you know that. So I deeply regret the fact that the Prime Minister is engaged in base politics rather than good policy. The government's own emissions task, trading task group said in its report, in the short to medium term, significant abatement will be available from relatively low-cost activities that improve energy efficiency and through adjustments to production techniques using existing technology, for example, fuel switching. And the potential to improve energy efficiency in Australia has been illustrated by the government's own, and I quote, towards a national framework for energy efficiency issues and challenges, report of 2003, which stated, improving the efficiency with which energy is used is important to Australia's economic, social and environmental well-being. Energy consumption in the manufacturing, commercial and residential sectors could be reduced by 20 to 30% with the adoption of current commercially available technologies with an average payback of 4 years. As they said in law school here, which I attended many decades ago, res ipsa loquitur. The facts speak for themselves. The research which Federal Labor and the Premiers have commissioned from Professor Ross Garnaut will provide valuable advice on climate change actions and targets based on science and proper economic modelling. And a Labor government would make decisions in regard to interim targets based on that advice and a substantive study of the science and economic modelling. No one should fall for the government's furphy that Labor's long-term target of a 60% reduction in emissions by 2050 has been plucked out of thin air or will destroy the economy. The CSIRO has suggested that to avoid more than 2-degree warming, developed countries like Australia would need to reduce their emissions by between 60 to 90% by 2050. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has found that the level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere will need to be kept between 445 to 490 parts per million in order to avoid dangerous climate change. According to the IPCC, this means global emissions will need to peak in the next 15 years and fall to 50% below 2000 levels by 2050. And economic modelling for the Australian Business Roundtable on climate change has shown that achieving a 60% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from year 2000 levels by 2050, which is Labor policy, is possible while maintaining economic growth, and that this can be done without resorting to nuclear power. The government simply chooses to address the issue politically, not economically. It develops this masking agent of rhetoric and delaying tactics which hides the ongoing environmental and economic damage caused by the denial, the scepticism and the lack of real action. Against this sorry picture of lost opportunity, the ALP has a clear set of policies designed to sensibly but strongly deal with climate change. We have a comprehensive framework for climate change. We've identified 10 key areas for action. 1, restoring Australia's international leadership on climate change. 2, developing a carbon market and reforming our institutions. 3, leading by example through good purchasing practices. 4, driving a clean energy revolution, including a substantial increase in the mandatory renewable energy target and investment in clean energy research and development. 5, helping Australian families to green their homes. 6, investing in cleaner businesses and creating new jobs. Working in partnership with businesses to drive energy efficiency improvements that deliver smarter and more productive industries. And as part of this, Labor will establish a $500 million National Clean Coal Fund to invest in advanced clean coal technologies. 7, investing in sustainable agriculture and protecting our biodiversity. 8, investing in cleaner transport, including the establishment of a $500 million Green Car Challenge to drive the use of greener, cleaner and more efficient cars. 9, preparing Australia for the future impacts of climate change. 10, finally, securing our future water supplies, including investing in urban and rural water projects, fixing leaky pipes and ensuring that 30% of wastewater is recycled nationally by 2015. And Labor's made policy announcements in each of these 10 areas, most recently announcing low-interest loans to help people invest in energy and water efficiency, providing $50 million to support the emerging geothermal industry, as well as $50 million to establish an Australian Solar Institute. Last week, Labor announced that in government it would set up a new national standard for carbon offset programs to ensure consumer confidence in this growing market. And yesterday, Kevin Rudd announced Labor would fast-track the National Agriculture and Climate Change Action Plan. Labor's comprehensive approach to climate change is all about securing Australia's future prosperity. It's all about recognising and acting on the recognition that climate change is our greatest economic and environmental challenge, and ensuring that we have a healthy environment and a healthy economy. That's the best possible legacy we can leave for those that follow. Thank you very much.